from the guy who's read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know, this is a Guy's Take episode. Happy 10th birthday, Bitcoin. It is Genesis Block Day, and it is Proof of Keys Day. I just wanted to say happy birthday, Bitcoin. This won't be a long episode. I just wanted to hit a couple of things on what I did today to celebrate Bitcoin's 10th birthday. Anybody who has listened to me for any length of time probably knows that I've been in Bitcoin for a rather long time. And I remember seeing literally some of the very, very first things come out in Bitcoin. When I first downloaded the wallet, essentially the only wallet available was the Core wallet. Electrum might have been available at that time, but I did not know about it. Actually, I don't think so. I think Electrum was quite a bit later. I remember my first wallets that I ever used were Bitcoin Core. No Multibit was way after that. I really think it was just Bitcoin Core. I think that was the only one that was available at the time. I messed around with Electrum and Multibit were wallets that I used. And there was a Multibit, eventually Multibit became Multibit Classic because hierarchically deterministic wallets were not even a thing. So when you made a backup of your wallet, it pre-generated like 100 addresses ready for you to use. It wouldn't show them to you until you requested another address to use. But it would pre-generate 100, and if you received 100 payments on 100 different addresses and then generated another 100, you had to redo your backup. It was not deterministic how it is now, where you do one backup, and then regardless of how much you use your wallet, you can always derive your keys and addresses later. Or you can derive your addresses from your main seed phrase. That did not exist. I remember that being a huge, I was like, oh my God, this is awesome when that was released. There was a lot of talk about that back in the day. And this was before there was any contention in the space. There was no debate going on. Basically the community was small enough that there wasn't much to argue about. It was clear. If anybody was really closely paying attention, you could see that scaling was going to be an issue because basically people would, whenever that conversation came up, it would basically be dismissed or like, we'll deal with it later type of thing because there were some pretty serious differences in views, but the community was small enough that nobody was arguing about it. And, you know, it wasn't consequential yet. Everybody was touting it as payments are free because you didn't even really put a fee on Bitcoin transactions. Blocks were empty pretty much most of the time. This was 7 years ago now. Seven and some changes. 2011, I think, when I first found out about Bitcoin and started reading about it. I did my rabbit hole dump like literally the first night. My brother actually learned about it on a Facebook group with like some anarchist friends that he was debating with about economics and the Federal Reserve. And I think we were still in the process of trying to figure out, we were still doing our economics kick, trying to figure out what we thought was good economics versus bad economics. And we went down a bunch of different, he's a economics, he graduated with a degree in economics, and so we went through a bunch of different theories. He argued with his professors. He would go, my brother's just as much of a geek as I am when it comes to this stuff, and he would actually go after class, like outside of class, and debate with his professors in their office. He would get scheduled office time to go debate with them, and then he would come home and be like, he said this and this is stupid, there's no way this could be right. And then we would argue about it and debate about it, and we went back and forth between, I remember when we initially thought of the Federal Reserve, we considered it, we wondered if it was actually a positive, as if this was actually a check on the government's ability to print money. And then when you start learning about how the Federal Reserve actually creates money and you learn about the specifics of the Federal Reserve Act, you're like, holy crap, this thing is a giant scam. It's exactly what caused the bank runs of the late 1800s solidified into law, so that it's a systemic problem as opposed to a singular bank problem where, oh, a bank goes out of business because they ran fractional reserves. Now it's just like, well, why don't we just screw the entire population out of all of their money and make it a huge systemic problem and accidentally cause the Great Depression? Regardless, I don't want to go too much into that. So we would go down these crazy rabbit holes of economics, and then he just stumbled upon, in debating with somebody on Facebook, somebody was like, man, you would probably be really interested in this thing called Bitcoin. Everyone's like, what? What the hell? What's all this Bitcoin stuff? And he goes digging into it, and then he's just utterly fascinated, and he called me within like an hour of finding. He was like, man, you have got to see this thing. This is so cool. And so we both went down the rabbit hole that night. We pretty much stayed up all night reading about it. We read through the white paper that day and immediately started learning about other attempts at doing this and about the cypherpunks. I didn't really know. I had kind of a cursory idea because I was getting into cryptography and computer security. I was always a tech geek, and I loved that stuff. But I didn't really know about the cypherpunks. I just had this idea that, you know, the internet was kind of like a natural cypherpunk. I didn't really know about them, but I knew that there were people who thought like I did, that there was, that you could do some amazing things on the internet and, you know, gain back your privacy. And I was just finally dipping my toes in that whole culture and ecosystem, learning that that was really possible. And the possibilities of the internet were starting to excite me. And then, boom, you know, I hit Bitcoin. And I remember the first time we bought Bitcoin, well, the first time we lost a ton of money on Bitcoin because of we bought it at the hype cycle. That's what, you know, was spreading the knowledge at the time, is there was a huge hype cycle going on in Bitcoin. And I remember you actually had to take cash. The services that were available were like extremely loosely connected to each other. So like one serve, like Mt. Gox would have a partnership with Dwolla, and then Dwolla was this like crappy, like pseudo PayPal type thing. But the way you actually deposited money in Dwolla was with this other company. I don't think it was, I don't think the one we used was Charlie Shrimp's Insta whatever. Man, I can't remember what that was called, but Charlie Shrimp ran a company that allowed you to purchase or deposit money into Bitcoin exchanges. I can't remember exactly how it all, I wish I had maybe written down or recorded some of the details. They maybe started a Bitcoin journal back then, but I do remember that to get money into Dwolla, I had to go to a bank with cash and deposit cash into somebody else's account, and it was just a random account. Like I was just given an account number and a deposit amount, and I think they made you do it like with a certain amount of like randomized cent that you had to do it. So like it would be like if I wanted to deposit $100 or whatever it was, I would deposit $100. They would ask me to deposit $100 in like 37 cents, and I literally think that was to differentiate deposits so that they could know who was depositing into the account. So I had to have exact change in cash. I'm like scrambling with some $20 bills and $1 bills and pulling change out of my change jars to go deposit into just somebody else's bank account. And then a couple hours later, like 4 hours later or something, I would have the money. I remember freaking out the first time. I was like, this wasn't working, like nothing was showing up on my online account. And then finally that would be deposited and it would show up sometime that day. And then I could transfer from that service to Mt. Gox. I mean, it was the sketchiest crap imaginable. And I wish I had thought to actually mine way back then, because we did actually mine some coins, but it was on the order of, you know, 10 or 20 cent a day. And so we just kind of cut it off. And at the time, like, it seems inconsequential, but I wish I'd just left the thing running, even when I made it to the GPU. And it was like I knew that, okay, this was going to be worth a ton of money one day. Like, I felt like this was, if the protocol survived, and it seemed to be working, I mean, it was already two years old and some change, that if it actually ran, that it was going to be huge, because I already saw the potential of programmable money was kind of the thing that, like, ticked me off. Like that was the one that just kind of turned that light bulb on, and I was just like, holy shit, imagine I can write down contractual stipulations on a dollar bill and hand it to somebody, and unless they fulfill those parameters, it comes back to me. And that just, when that light bulb came on, I was just like, holy shit, this really is going to be a new internet. And this is going to disrupt everything in finance that is, and I knew the acceleration was going to be incredible, because finance was particularly an industry that was so far behind everything else. It was kind of like, I think when we really start to see obviously the ball is already rolling down the hill, without a doubt. But I think in the next couple of years, it's going to speed up. It's going to accelerate in a huge way as far as services actually becoming available to the market, new ways to use this thing actually expanding, particularly with Layer 2 now here. I mean, it's here. It is. It's not being utilized to its potential even remotely. But it is. I think it is at a state where a business can sufficiently manage channels to provide services for other people with payments. And I feel like the thing is actually working. I have been incredibly happy with my Casa node. Anybody who has listened to Crypto Chat 8, the recent episode, knows that it's been behaving for me. Right now, I'm trying to sort out all the specifics around good channel management, because I want my channels to be useful on the network. I don't want just my channels sitting around, because that's no good. I want to be opening channels with services that I know people are using, so I can route to, I want to be useful on the network. I want to be a node connected to all of the dominant services on the network. So it's been working for me. I have not had to, except for channels that just haven't been used, that don't seem to have routes or route payments anywhere. Outside of that, I really like having my channels open and available. I have sent numerous payments. I don't even know how many payments now. I haven't really checked or counted lately, but it's a good chunk. It's enough that it certainly has I've made far more payments than I have channels. I know at this point that's the truth. And I've also received a number of tips and payments on Lightning. And that's with a very small user base that I have already basically outweighed the cost, the payments amount in order to establish my channels. And for someone who has really used it rather cursorily, just kind of in a very general, almost observational sense, I have not really dug into it in a almost productive like manner. I have not like sat down and done my homework and, you know, brought out a thing of, okay, this is how I'm going to manage my channels. And I haven't yet gone into the actual command line on my Casa node so I can see all the payments routed and, you know, what, get real data on my channels. I haven't done that yet. I fully intend to. I've just got a lot of stuff that I've been working on. So even at like just kind of an observational, like playing with it stage, I feel like it's been incredibly useful to have it available to me. I truly think that 2019 and 2020 are going to be insanely exciting years when it comes to that. And because of that, I think like I was saying, is the finance, the industry of financial services has been so far behind everything in the internet. Something that has always driven me crazy, and a number of years ago, it really came to light when Bitcoin was actually my best options for sending or receiving money in a couple of specific scenarios, that, you know, I can send somebody a text straight to Japan in no time at all. But if I want to send that same person money, it's a nightmare, and it's expensive. It's incredibly slow. And it's only in the last couple of years that that has really started changing. And it's still specific to jurisdiction. It's still completely reliant on services like Square and Venmo. If their country or their location cannot open up accounts with these companies, then there are no options. You're back to banking, and you're back to, you know, 5-day wire transfers and 5% fees. Like, it's really absurd how far behind the infrastructure, the actual core of how the banking system works. It's like they've stacked a whole bunch of like digital facade in front of it, but what's actually happening on the back end has not changed for like 60 years. It's just so antiquated, it's unbelievable. So I liken it to like how quickly the acceleration will happen when these companies start being really disrupted at the consumer level. Is that it will look like ASIC chips when first like FPGAs and stuff came out in Bitcoin mining back in, I guess it was 2012 maybe. It could have been late 2011. We went from CPUs to GPUs to FPGAs and then ASICs so fast. That transition was unbelievable. It was like people being delayed a week or two in getting their mining equipment was obsoleting them. It was insane how fast all of that was happening. And at first I was just like, is this possibly going to keep pace? Like, is this going to keep happening like this? But then I realized that what was happening is we were designing specialized hardware in an industry that had to catch up with 30 years of normal computing processing infrastructure. So, like, whereas we already had 14, 16 nanometer chips in, like, a CPU, like a computer that you would just buy in like high-end processors, there was no infrastructure whatsoever for creating an ASIC with specifically designed to hash the SHA-256 ECDSA whatever algorithm, that just did not exist. So we were straight up starting from scratch. It was like we're in today's world, but we're thrown naked in the woods and we have to start building our house by cutting down trees. Like, we really have to start the entire cycle over again. So rather than taking 30 years to get there, it accelerates. It smashes that 30 years worth of progress into literally 2.5 years. And so it happens so fast that there's just no keeping up. You have a company that literally goes from zero to $500 million in 3 months, and then they're bankrupt 4 months later. I mean, it just, the amount of stuff happening then was almost breathtaking. I was on Reddit all day, every day, trying to keep up with it, because that was the place to keep up with anything with Bitcoin at the time, which I hardly do Reddit at all anymore. I feel like Twitter is basically the best social forum to get the information. But it was, oh God, it was just, oh, it was like a rush. It was like being on drugs 24/7, the amount of things that were happening, and then the price was always going nuts. So when something wasn't happening with development or a company, and it kind of is still like that, it's far calmer and less volatile, particularly with the infrastructure, the businesses. Like, there are things that have been established and you know aren't just going to disappear tomorrow. Back in 2012, 2013, you had no idea. In 3 weeks, everything could be different. I mean, Mt. Gox was some odd 90% of the exchange liquidity on the network, the volume. That's what I'm looking for. The amount of volume that was going on in buying and selling Bitcoin, it really got up to something like 90% with Mt. Gox, and then in a matter of months, they were gone. They were just poof. And honestly, that's one of the reasons I didn't think this bear market was going to be as bad as the last one, is because the entire market was so dependent on Mt. Gox that we literally had to replace all of the main infrastructure, like with exchanges, and basically create new habits and new trust paths, like trusted services in the industry, to actually get back to a stable position in the ecosystem, in the economy. And so it made complete sense that we had like a 2-year bear market in that position, because there was so much essentially to rebuild. And I have to admit, I was, even though it made sense from the MVRV, the market value to realized value ratios, the on-chain to, what's the other ratio? There's a couple of different of those, like the MVT measurements and stuff like that. There were a lot of things that were indicating we could go a lot lower at when we were sitting at 6,000, but the amount of time we sat there and the fact that we did not have that huge infrastructure rebuild that we had to take care of made me legitimately consider that we were going to stay at 6,000. It was just going to be an indefinite long draw for, you know, maybe 9 or 10 months sideways, essentially. I was very clearly wrong about that. I think me and Carr Camp had actually had a conversation about that when we met up and had some beers one day. And I was pretty much sold on it. It was so stable for so long. I shouldn't have been so naive. I've been through a number of bear markets now, and I know these things. I was really convincing myself that this time was different, and it wasn't. And price does not reflect what's going on at the protocol level. Price is basically the lowest common denominator of what people think about it right now. And so I'm not surprised that we're here, even though it surprised me at the time when we broke down. But as soon as we broke down below, you know, 5,800, I was like, oop, this is going to be nasty. Yeah, so what I did today in order to celebrate the proof of keys date, well, I actually had, I tweeted about it. I actually had my proof of keys already. I don't leave anything. I don't put anything on exchanges unless I, you know, have to cash out to keep this podcast up and running or something like that. I usually just use local Bitcoins. I try to stick to one thing, so taxes are dirt simple for me. Because of that, I didn't really have anything to use with proof of keys or anything to do to celebrate it. So I decided to buy $50 worth of Bitcoin on Square Cash and the Cash App, and then withdrew it to my Casa node. So I will open up a new Lightning channel, and I actually did open up two Lightning channels previous to actually withdrawing from the Cash App. I opened up a channel with Zigzag, which I have used a number of times now to get liquidity in my own channels. Great service to do, send a Lightning payment to them, and then they send an actual on-chain Bitcoin payment back to you. And I feel like they're used pretty regularly. They have, I think in the last 24 hours, they've had like 20 payments or so. And so that's exciting, and I think that will be a useful channel. So I've opened up a channel with them, and because I have been getting a number of tips, thank you to everybody who has sent me tips. I've got a number of tips on Tippin.me, and I can withdraw. I do have a route available with them, but I think Tippin.me is going to be a huge service. It's dirt simple right now, but I really, really hope, I think Sergio, I believe his name is, all I remember is his Twitter tag, EIPROL. I think that service, if he sticks with that and tries to work with some other teams, maybe Lightning Jewel, to kind of make sure that these things operate together, and hopefully he's talking to the Casa guys, because I think that could be a huge service. It's just such a simple, straightforward thing, and I love it. Like I said, I've gotten at least 4 or 5 tips. And I can just withdraw it to my Lightning node, and it's a Lightning payment, and I don't have to open or close any channels. So I decided to actually just open one directly with Tippin.me, because I think it will be useful in routing payments for other people. or routing withdrawals from there, because I'll have, or I guess it would be payments too. Yeah, because when I open up a channel, all the balance is on my side. So unless I do like a zigzag liquidity where I send them a Lightning payment and then get it back and specifically use the route through Tipin.me, then for a short while, my channel will only be one way to Tipin.me. But I also saw that yalls.org now, Alex Bosworth posted on Twitter that you can now use yalls.org to do that exact same thing that Zigzag is allowing, essentially send a Lightning payment to them to get liquidity back in your direction, and then they send, yalls.org will send a Bitcoin transaction on-chain to you. And that is really exciting because I think one of those, particularly for services trying to provide on the Lightning Network and make available to the Lightning Network, I think in micromanaging, in actually managing your own channels, those types of services are critical, and I think they're going to make a huge difference. And I love that there are now multiple options to do that. I don't have to specifically do it with Yalls or Zigzag. Like, I have multiple options to actually go out and do my own channel management. And I'm trying to get the specifics of that. In fact, if anybody wants to retweet my my mention to, I tweeted to Alex Bosworth, looking for suggestions, because I have a lot of channels that haven't been doing anything. And I want to close them, but I want to open up, I want to make sure, I want to rely less on autopilot with my actual Casa node. And I want to have channels that are doing something. Like I said, I want to have one with Tipin.me because I think Tipin.me is going to be highly used. I want one with Zigzag because I know Zigzag is highly used. I just want his suggestions on how to best manage your channels, because he said he gave information on how many channels or how many routes that payments he's routed. And then Melek Manukyan, if nobody has seen that, at Ludwig, Real Ludwig Art, I believe. Real Ludwig Art is the tag. I'll post that in the show notes. If anybody has seen that, he has he's routed payments to two of these channels that he has. Or maybe it was his full. Was it multiple channels, or was it based on his entire node? I can't remember, because I remember looking at the stats, and I think it was like 50. He has 50 channels open. There are 40 channels open, maybe. Oh, good Lord. I got no specifics here. But I know it was something like 200 to 300, somewhere in between that, percent of actual funds that he had in the channel was the amount that he routed back and forth for other payments. And that's insane. Like, that's crazy, crazy good use of a channel. And I want to be that efficient or valuable on the network. I don't know. I think these are going to be crazy. I think the next 10 years is going to be just as insane and exciting as the last 10 years. I think this next 10 years is going to be when things come to fruition and we see what will happen on the consumer side. We see how this changes the major industries. That's what happens this decade. This previous decade, the first 10 years of Bitcoin's life was it growing and defining itself. And I think we've had a crazy, crazy run. And I think we came out with the best of all worlds. It's immutable. It's about immutability. It's about security. And it's about having a fundamental reliability in the protocol, so that you do not have to trust people. You do not have to trust the governance system. You do not have to trust the votes in the people who actually keep up with what's going on in development, that the protocol and the monetary policy in the actual network are the shelling point. And if there is not overwhelming support to actually change it, then it doesn't change. We default on immutability and security as paramount above all other things. And I think that was the smart route. I think that was the only way that this thing will survive. Otherwise, like I said, if anybody has listened to or read my article How many forks does it take to get to the center of Satoshi's vision? I kind of laid out my argument there that deciding to using hard forks, like specifically hard forks, as a means of quote unquote upgrading every 6 months creates a rolling political battle that never ends. And it doesn't matter if it's not contentious this time or the next time. Inevitably, it's going to be a battle of personalities, and it's going to turn into this sad, murky, unreliable, and just hate-filled social media governance platforms, like a crappy social media democracy. It's completely civil attack, not resistant, vulnerable. And I think it's just a terrible way to actually expand the protocol. And I think layers are security at the foundation, and layers are the ultimate and best choice moving forward. I mean, that's how we did the internet. That's why the internet has sustained and survived so long, even with quote unquote terrible scaling limitations at the base layer. I mean, we have many thousands, multiples of the number of devices online as IP addresses available. And did that keep the internet from growing? Of course not. In fact, that hasn't been a hindrance at all, even though there's been huge contentious debate about it. And there's so many people trying to push IPv6. It's still hardly in use. It's still massively dominated by IPv4. And it hasn't been a problem. I think we'll see something very similar happen with Bitcoin. It's about the security and the compatibility, the ability to backwards compatible all the devices, all the hardware, all the routing, firmware, and all that good stuff with the base protocol. And Bitcoin, despite continued contention and despite continued arguments, there will be very little foundational changes in the Bitcoin core code after the next couple of years. I think after about another 3, maybe 5 years, if we do have any major soft forks, they will be extremely extended, and they will be huge moments and extremely rare. I think the idea of having always preparing for the next soft fork will slowly fall away. In place of development in layer two. After we get the core functionality of layer two with privacy, enabled privacy, like pay to endpoints type stuff, and a really widespread coin join and that kind of thing, and batching, like signature aggregation, like Schnorr, and expand the scripts again with a couple of the upgrades that are coming out. As soon as we get a handful of those, SIG hash no input is another big one that I think will happen. As soon as we get a handful of those on the foundational level, I think we will have enough dynamic capabilities at the foundational level to basically push the bulk of contractual agreements and complex scripting onto layers 2 and 3, and we will not need to change the base layer. And with what I am seeing so far with my Lightning node and the Lightning network, I think on-chain transactions will be aggregated more and more often. I think figuring out clever ways to trustlessly aggregate signatures and transactions with people that you do not know on the network will expand in a huge way. Because it will be all about efficient management of channels and extremely low cost in splicing, opening and closing channels, and making sure that your channels are productive, that they are operating in a productive manner, that they're being useful on the network and useful to you, that they're not sitting and being stagnant. I think that will be where the next wave of major developments and breakthroughs will happen, and I'm super excited. I can see the future of this use, where my node is doing stuff in the background. My node is routing payments. My node is available to me at all times to receive or send payments. Excuse me. And I think channel management will be as both a service on the network and as far as like routing firmware and software. I keep calling it a router. I think of my node as a router for finance. That's literally what I think of it as, is that we are starting over with the infrastructure for the internet at a base layer where the protocol is completely separate and it is completely about trust, contractual arrangements, and financial system. And because of that, I literally think of my Lightning and Bitcoin node, my Casa node, as the router for this new internet. I literally call it that when I'm talking about it. So if you hear me say router, if I don't specifically say IP addresses or I'm talking about the internet specifically, that's probably what I'm referring to, because that's what I think of it as, is that I'm going to have a router in my house and for the internet, and I'm going to have a router in my house for my banking. And I think this is the future of personal banking. I think this is be your own bank. And Bitcoin is succeeding. I think it's just a matter of time now. I've said this before with people that I don't remember which crypto chat it was, but I try to be reasoned, particularly when I'm talking to other people, because you do have to caveat everything with this is still an experiment and this is not a sure thing. Like, you can't just say that, okay, Bitcoin is going to be here in 20 years. It's going to change the whole freaking world. I do say that sometimes, but I always try to temper it with, you know, it could fail. But I just don't think it is. I think we have gotten past the major humps. I think right now it's all, I think the major limitations are privacy and public perception. I think those are just a matter of time. I don't think these are protocol-killing problems, because the innovation has been pushed to the edge. Somebody can invent, like nobody can stop development for privacy on Bitcoin. So I just don't see those being ways to kill Bitcoin. I see those being just the current challenges, the speed bumps that need to be gotten over. But I think public perception is a matter of time with use and legitimacy. And I think that will mostly be solved by fiat committing suicide. I think the destruction and the massive imbalance that our financial system has caused, the world, the global financial system is so unbelievably out of balance. We are going to have a massive debt crisis that should have happened in 2008, that should have happened in 2000, but we keep kicking the can down the road and making it worse and worse and worse. And when it finally comes to fruition and we see the currencies that literally die because of this massive imbalance, I think the legitimacy of Bitcoin will, I think it will be a lack of options. Like it will happen completely on its own. Bitcoin doesn't have to do anything other than remain. It simply has to survive. And I think we have gotten to that point where it's going to survive. And happy birthday. Happy birthday, 10 years Bitcoin. I think we have a hell of a future ahead of us. I think we're staying right here. We're not going anywhere. And I think anybody who is not getting on this train now is going to have a harder and harder time keeping up with it. I think this is late 90s, maybe early 90s internet that get ahead of this wave. Ride the wave. Be on the surfboard when the wave comes in. Be ready to catch it. Because that's why no matter what I'm doing elsewhere, I'm staying in Bitcoin. I'm still reading and rereading Mastering Bitcoin. I want to learn and know everything about this as much as I can. I'm working on Lightning stuff. I truly think this is the absolute undeniable future of finance. And whatever happens, this is going to be how people do commerce in the future. And I'm so excited about it. And it has just been a crazy, utterly crazy 10 years. And I'm sure there's 1,000 other things I could talk about, but I'm already hitting 40 minutes here with this show. And this is our happy proof of keys day. I got to participate. I was so sad that I couldn't participate because I didn't have anything on exchanges or anything. So I bought some Bitcoin today and withdrew it from my Cash App. So I participated in proof of keys, and I also opened up two. I'll be opening up a third Lightning channel today that I hope will be more useful than the ones that have been stagnant. And hopefully I'll have a good video about what was successful and what wasn't relatively soon. But I know I'm working on a bunch of other stuff first. So I still haven't even finished iterative capital management. I just talked to Chris Dannon the other day. I'm sure he's just like, what is this guy doing? He said he was going to finish this thing. Because I'm re-recording the first 5 sections of that thing because the audio quality was crap. And it does not edit together with the last 2 sections. So I'm literally having to redo pretty much the entire thing. And that is a long, long piece. If you have not listened to it yet, though, you got to go back to those episodes or hold out for the long read version. Still not 100% sure how long it's going to be, but I am trying to buckle down and get that one finished and released so I can hit that, hit my collection since I've done a lot of the organization on the back end to get that code ready. I just got to redo all my short code for each of the episodes and make my playlist. After that, though, I should have a lot of stuff coming out with CryptoEconomy.life. So everybody check out the website at CryptoEconomy.life. If you want to drop me some Lightning tips, you can do my tipping.me button, which is in the sidebar. Or, of course, you can send it to my Bitcoin address, which is also my Casa node, to help me open up a 4th channel on Bitcoin's 10th birthday. That would be super exciting. And thank you, everybody who has donated. I keep seeing little payments come in, and I'm like trying to figure out if I made those payments, or because sometimes I just send stuff to my node, and I'm like, wait, crap, did I get another tip? So I can't specifically say thank you to any one person, but I know I have gotten payments that I can't quite account for. So thank you to whoever has donated to my Lightning node. It's been a huge help. I love it. I love to see little payments come in. I love to see payments routed. I love it when I see balances on the other side of a channel that were not there previously when I checked on it. So it's just exciting. It's exciting to see stuff move. It's exciting to see my router routing on the new financial internet. And we got a bright ass future ahead. And I hope you guys stick with this. I hope you guys stick with the podcast, the Crypto Economy podcast. I hope you guys go to CryptoEconomy.life and do the deep dive and dig into and listen to everything and learn everything about Bitcoin with me. I will be here all the time. I may casually have a week or two break over holidays or when I'm just exhausted and need to work on something else. But I will be here. So stick with me. Subscribe. Follow me on Twitter at the Crypto Economy and check me out on CryptoEconomy.life. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening to the show. This has been a Guy's Take episode, and I will catch you next time. Happy birthday to Bitcoin, 10 years, and still running without a hitch. Take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.